right? I'm very intentional about the words that I use. Whereas I did say I quit my job in the tweet, I've really been pushing this as I fired my boss, because that was me taking back power, right? I left on my terms. They were left having to pick up pieces.
Here's the tempo. I'll give it to you now. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Welcome to another episode of The Culture's Money.
Welcome to The Culture's Money.
The Culture's Money is a podcast created to discuss how we multiply the $1.2 trillion in spending power possessed by the American Black community through the vehicles of investing, personal finance, ownership, networking, and most importantly, collaboration. We are the culture, baby, and we are the financing that we've been seeking. Now, let's get into this money talk. And here's your host, Jamal Vitos.
Welcome back, culture members. This is another episode of The Culture's Money. I am your host, Jamal Vitos. Some of you may know me on other platforms as Leo Grand Prince. But however it is that you know me, I hope you know me to be an advocate of financial literacy, generational wealth, and generational health. Anything, all matters according to the cultures, mindsets, entrepreneurship, anything that gets the culture moving, this is what we talk about here. I am happy to have another guest. At this point, he's a returning guest, a good friend of mine, Mr. Rakim Sabri. We're going to talk about a lot of things going on. If you guys didn't catch the episode that he had on last season, definitely go back and run that back because that was a classic. And we are going to have another classic today. What's going on, man?
What's going on? Enjoying freedom.
Freedom. Now, I want y'all to know this conversation came about because Rakim, I think it was last week. I think it might have been. Was it a week?
May 28th.
So, yeah. So he tweets out, I want y'all to know I quit my job. Just randomly. Now, anybody who's on Twitter, you know when somebody tweets something like that, it catches your time. Because you're like, what? Like, are you serious? Is this a random thought? Like, and he tweeted, I was like, for real? He like, yeah. I said, oh, this an episode we need to talk about. So let's talk about, before we get to that point, what had been going on that brought you to that point that you were deciding, you know what, I'm sick of corporate America, I'm sick of corporate ladder, like, what had been going on in the first, is what, the 6 months into the year, because I imagine you don't just wake up and decide to do that. I mean, some people might, but I doubt you're more of a planner, so what had brought you to that point, you know what, enough is enough.
Yeah, I'm absolutely a planner. So this caught a lot of people off guard, including myself. But to your point, it's something that has been building for the last 6 months. I remember back in February, I tweeted out of anger, really out of frustration, about corporate America's toxic trait. And I don't want to butcher the tweet, but it went into talking about how corporate America gaslights you into basically insecurity, right? Like you are minimized in terms of what your intrinsic value is, but you're worked in that corporate environment. So like I said, I don't want to butcher the quote, but it was up there and it caught a couple of people's attention. It was kind of like a running thing. At that point, I thought that was going to go viral. And every time an instance occurred since then, so this was back in February, every time an instance occurred since then that frustrated me, made me feel powerless, made me feel unseen or unheard, I would add to the tweet thread about just like the isms of corporate, right? You go into these pointless meetings and, you know, the buzzwords and the posturing and just the politics and the games. And I would feed into that thread and people would react to it. But on the side of reality where I'm actually experiencing these microaggressions and, you know, these feelings of doubt, really, and making a choice between what is being a corporate citizen, what is being a full-time entrepreneur. The 2 weeks leading up to my decision were both very rewarding in that so many people out of the blue were coming up to me, pouring into me, like reminding me of my value, how talented I am, how intelligent I am, what I have going for me, what I've done, basically that I would be okay. And then without knowing about the frustrations that I'm experiencing on the job, but then on the job side, they were being a lot more aggressive about the things that made me feel the way that I was feeling in terms of frustration, assigning me tasks that had nothing to do with my role, disregarding how I was feeling and articulating that I wasn't wasn't happy. There was uncertainty in the workplace. I had conversations with my direct manager around the need to, or how it's a good idea for me to have a plan B. So just kind of like veiled suggestions around that uncertainty and being put in a situation repeatedly where I had to justify my value and justify my role being there. And it was an uncomfortable space for me to be in. You know, on the one hand, I'm a rock star, right? Like I'm being featured all over the place. I'm producing outside of the confines of corporate. On the other hand, I'm being given grunt work. And, you know, I'm not somebody who's too good to do work, right? Like I'll roll up my sleeves and I'll get into the weeds, but I felt like it was a disproportionate experience for me being the youngest manager on my team, being one of only two Black managers on my team and two Black male managers on my team. There was a difference in leadership style and leadership philosophy as it relates to, you know, what production looks like in my role. So I had a project management kind of role, project support role. And, you know, there are days that it didn't take an 8-hour workday for me to get my work done. There were days that it didn't take really any work for me to get my work done. And then there were days that I would be involved. I would be up, you know, 10 o'clock, 10:30 doing work. So there was just a lot of misdirection in terms of what my leadership was providing me, a lot of lack of clarity. I felt like I was being set up. I felt like I was being guided to a point where they would ultimately dismiss me, either involuntary or create a situation where I would slip up and they would say, oh, there's that angry Black man. We got to, you know, kind of nip that up. So I said, you know what? I want to leave on my terms. I want to leave on top. I was a high performer up until the day that I left. Never was written up. Always had positive reviews. Always got a bonus. Always got a raise. Always said yes. Always helped out, even if it was something that I didn't want to do. And so I wanted that to be kind of like seared into their minds when I left, that you lost somebody who was a team player. You lost somebody who was talent. You mismanaged that talent. And I made the choice on my own to leave, not be performance managed out.
Now, the great part about that, the most touching thing about your tweet that hit me was the ending when you said, I left for my mental health. And it's so funny. I mean, you're talking about, I'm not sure if you saw it. It's been a big thing the last week and a half in sports. And by the time you guys hear this, I'm sure you'll have seen it, about Naomi Osaka deciding not to talk to press because it's detrimental to my health. Like, and it's funny that you phrased that weeks before she did this at the French Open, that, you know, I need to get out of here. And I had tweeted something, I think last week, maybe a little bit after you tweeted, telling people, stop taking these jobs and salaries that make you unhappy. Like, people will take a promotion, take a salary. Oh, it's the salary I want, but it ain't the job you want. It's not the environment you want. It's not the corporate interaction you want. Yeah, you don't even like these people. And you're getting up every day because the salary looks good. Every 2 weeks, it seems okay. So when did you know that your mental health was more important? And I know you went into some of the tweets about, you know, you had built a couple of six-figure businesses. This wasn't impulse, but a sense of urgency had to have hit you at some point that was like, no, I can't do it anymore.
Yeah, I started to get to a point where I didn't like how I was feeling when I would sign into work. I worked from home for the last year plus now. I didn't like how I was feeling. And I started to get to a point where I didn't recognize myself, if that makes any sense. Like, mm-hmm. I was very anxious. I was very angry. And those were the dominant, I think, responses that spilled over into my motivations and passions around doing my own thing, right? So like now I don't work on both ends, right? Like I'm not working because I'm not engaged in my job that's paying me, and I'm not inspired or motivated to produce in my side work. So now I'm just existing, right? I'm showing up, and literally the life is like being drained out of me. I'm collecting a check, and I don't like that. I don't like the way that felt. I didn't like feeling of settling. I didn't like the feeling of just being comfortable. And that anxiety piece, you know, I don't know if I shared this the last time we met, but I had struggled with anxiety and depression like massively back in, I want to say 2016, 2017, and really started coming out of it in 2018 when I published my first book. So I'm very sensitive to triggers and recognizing what those triggers are. And my manager was sort surveilling me, for lack of, you know, for lack of better phrasing, on LinkedIn. And so every time I would share an accomplishment or something that I was involved in, the most recent was I was featured in Entrepreneur among 17 other business leaders talking about diversity, equity, and inclusion. Mm-hmm. I was also accepted as a speaker to FinCon in September. And I shared those things on LinkedIn, and she saw them, obviously, did not engage with them. So there's no like, there's no comment. I would not otherwise know that she saw them. And then sends me a message via email ahead of a one-on-one that was scheduled, directing me to complete a form that documented my outside business interests. Now, these two events are unpaid, you know, circumstances, right? Like a feature, I mean, some people do pay for features, but this was not a paid feature. Mm-hmm. And, you know, FinCon is compensating me to show up through covering my admission, but they're not paying me to speak. So she was making assumptions, and I was just like, this is not the first or the second time that this has come up. She's trying to now manage my outside of work activities. And it was, I was hesitant to share those things, and I should not feel hesitance around sharing things that are impactful, that are making a difference, that have nothing to do with the company that I work for. So that was, among other things, some of the circumstances that really made the environment feel a little hostile to me. And I mean, we can go real deep with this, but you talk about the presence of Black people in general, but Black men specifically in a corporate environment, and the emasculating effects of having to posture and code switch and, you know, change the tone of your voice and bite your tongue and not engage for fear of being viewed as hostile or angry or aggressive or a bully, and for fear of being penalized through compensation, promotions, exposure opportunities. Those are things that I had learned to deal with for 10 years. And it just got to a point where I didn't want to bottle that anymore. I mean, on the one hand, I'm like expressing my greatness out into the world outside of a corporate environment, and then being kind of like pigeonholed into this small box. And there was no way for that duality to exist. Either I was going to be great or I was not going to be great. And so ultimately I had to bet on me. I wasn't going to let my dream be stifled or killed or minimized because it made somebody else uncomfortable.
And it's interesting you talk about the manager who was watching and surveilling you. I saw the tweet that followed the one where you said you quit. Is this the one who sent you the message to say, let's talk and kind of work it out? And your response to me was kind of, was perfect. It was like, no, I'm good. Sorry, you're fired. So it's very interesting that when you decide to bet on yourself, or, you know, decide that your mental health or your, you know, just overall being is more important than any paycheck, any time clock, that the gaslighting continues, because now they're going to tap dance and pigeon toe and, oh, how can we accommodate you and all these other things? But there was no consideration before. There was no, you know, checking in or mental health or any evaluation then. But now it seems that you're going to be in a bind and you're losing a top tier worker. All of a sudden now you want to discuss it. Do you find that very, I guess I want to say, ass backwards?
So I anticipated the behavior before I made my decision, and I did not create an avenue for that to take place. So I sent my resignation. She called me. I didn't call her back. She left a voicemail. She texted me to let me know that she called me and left the voicemail. I did not respond. There has been no communication between me and that individual since pressing the send button on my resignation. All communication with the company has taken place through third party intermediaries. I didn't want them to come back and tell me, first of all, they couldn't pay me enough, right? They couldn't pay me enough. I didn't want them to come back and say, oh, well, we're going to take away the things that are making you unhappy, because I had already shared the things that was making me unhappy. She acknowledged that she heard me and essentially tried to strong arm me and to say, well, we need to fill up your day with stuff. These are things that need to get done. Here you go. This is an expectation of your role now. And I'm like, well, you know, I won't say toxic traits, but it's frustrating. A frustrating trait of corporate environments, they leave language that is very ambiguous intentionally so that they can switch things up. Like, these are the summary of your roles and responsibilities. And then the very last bullet will be something like other duties as assigned, right? So that covers.
I noticed that as well. I think I had a conversation with someone that rarely is the job exactly what the job posting is. Oh, yeah. It is never exactly the roles. It's never exactly the job. And They add a lot of asinine things that you're like, bro, this is not even what the role is. Right.
And I mean, I have been this last, you know, week and a half reflecting on, you know, some of the things that you navigate, right? Like they, again, use that ambiguous language. So one of the biggest kind of bones of contention for me was not that I had to, or not that it was a burden on the company to prove that there was a conflict of interest ever. It was a burden on me to prove that there was not. And so the language in HR guidebook or manual says that it's not a conflict of interest that is punishable, we'll use that word, but it's the perception of a conflict of interest. Well, I'm working in a banking environment and I'm giving financial education or financial advice, consulting, coaching, what have you. There's a million ways for them to spin what it is that I'm doing as a perceived conflict of interest, right? Even if, and this is true, I was not customer facing. I was not interacting with clients at all. So there's no way for me to steal clients or steal customers from that workplace. Did I have access to databases that had customer sensitive information? 100%. So did everybody else. But was I using that as a primary function of my role? No. But because I had access, they could say, oh, well, you know, how are you prospecting? And they weren't going to get into the semantics of what my role was versus what I do outside of work. I think the conflict of interest would have been explored through the lens of how much of Rakim's 24-hour day is dedicated to working for the company that he works for, and how much of his 24-hour day is dedicated towards doing his own thing. And is there any intersection, right? So I'm working from home. Of course, I'm posting on social media during the day, right? That could have been an angle. Of course, I am sharing content that is relating to financial education. I mean, that's the brand that I built. So I just felt like there were too many variables outside of my control. And I didn't like that. I wanted to control these variables. I was tired of justifying, explaining, reassuring. It's like being in a relationship with somebody who is insecure in the relationship. And that's not the space. I don't have the energy. I don't have the energy to contribute to that environment. What this organization should have done was recognize that I have a passion for what it is that I have a passion for, recognize the skill sets that I had, recognize, you know, what it is that I had learned over the time that I've been working for them, and then found a way where they can leverage those things to further their goals, right? There are definitely synergies there. They could have poured into me, invested into me to make me feel very comfortable in the space that I was in and very supported. And I would have been probably a lot more of an engaged employee instead of resisting and fighting, pushing me away.
It's always an interesting thing to me. It's like, okay, first of all, I always talk about how corporate America takes forever to fill some of these jobs. Like, it's always, you apply for a job and you maybe, yeah, I'm sure as a lot of you have seen it, the job's still open 6 months later or a year later or something like that. Or when they get someone who quote unquote meets the criteria or the qualifications or the education, they make the people miserable. Like the role isn't, most people apply for roles. Of course, some people apply based off salary. That's why some corporations have stopped putting salaries on the posting. But most people apply for roles because they read the description. They like what they hear. They're like, okay, I want to do that. And then you employ them, take them through all this HR and filling out paperwork and bringing you on board. And 6 months into the job, they're doing nothing that you said they were going to be doing. They're not happy. You're wondering why they're not performing because you have them doing things they don't want to do. Busy work. And I say this all the time that corporations fill your day with a lot of busy work because some role isn't being filled or is still open. They give you things that, and then they use trigger words like this, like you said, there's symmetry, there's correlation. And like, no, there's not. There's no symmetry. There's no correlation. You're just trying to get two and three roles for the salary of one. You're overworking your people, making them miserable, making a hostile environment. Then if they don't want to do it or their attitude shifts, there's this rash to say, oh, you're not a team player, you and all that. And I commend you for getting out of that environment and firing your boss, because it's very trendy. Some people say, you know, we see it on social media all the time. People say, oh, I'm about to quit my job tomorrow. They're making me miserable. But that shackle of obligation and responsibilities and bills and all that kind of leads people to have to put up with. And I'm not, before you guys go on a rant, no one's implying you to quit your job. You got two kids and a family. I'm not saying that. But sometimes, and I'm sure Rakim will agree in what he's going to say next, is You got to bet on yourself. Sometimes the freedom of leaving those shackles of that imprisonment puts you in a better position to provide for you and your family.
Yeah, it's something I've been kind of drilling home lately because so many people. So that tweet had 2.3 million impressions. I don't remember how many retweets. I think it's like 4,000 retweets and 39,000 likes or whatever. I mean, it was a viral tweet.
No, bro, you're underselling yourself because I'm looking at it right now. Yeah, you had 40,000 likes, 4,300 retweets, 1,000 retweets.
And a lot of the feedback that I was getting from people were just what you said, right? Like, oh, I'm going to quit my job. This is so inspirational. I'm next. And then there was a lot of, you know, praise, like, congratulations. I'm proud of you. Good for you. Good for choosing you. But I'm concerned about the people that see that tweet as inspirational and then go make a rash decision without any kind of backing, right? Like, mm-hmm. I've been building a brand while I've been working that I can lean into now fully. And I don't have dependent children or spouse that is going to be impacted by, you know, the change in my life circumstances. So that's a huge variable to mm-hmm. consider. But the second part of what I want to share with mindset and all of this is that too often do we go into these contracts, right? Where we're agreeing to work for somebody and they're agreeing to hire us and we're viewing it through the lens of like their mastery over us, right? I'm very intentional about the words that I use. Whereas I did say I quit my job in the tweet, I've really been pushing this as I fired my boss because that was me taking back power, right? I left on my terms. They were left having to pick up pieces, completely, completely blown away, completely surprised. There was no notice. It was effective immediately. They're like, what the hell? Like, what do we do? And still trying to figure out, like, what did we do to push them to this point? But that was me taking back my power, right? Like, I had been frustrated for a while. I had shared my frustration. We are in a contractual relationship. You have the right to get rid of me whenever you feel like getting rid of me. I have the right to get rid of you whenever I feel like getting rid of you. And so when people go out and apply for jobs, one of the pieces of advice that I got early on was you're interviewing that company just as much as they're interviewing you, right? You're asking questions to make sure that the organization, the culture, the environment, the leadership is a fit with you, not to just audition and showcase your skills and say, hey, look, here I am, pick me. Same thing when it comes to terminating your employment. They have the right to get rid of you whenever they feel like it. Most employers are at will. Of course, HR, there's that gray area, right, where they have to performance manage, they have to justify, they want to avoid any kind of legal action or in a lot of cases, unemployment. But in that situation, like I was like, listen, our contract is up. Like, I'm not getting out of this what I signed up for. You're changing the nature of my role based off of the descriptions that I applied for. My skills are not being utilized in the way that they could be. My talent is being mismanaged. I want to go somewhere else. And, I had been applying for other jobs for a while. And like you said, they have just this tedious process where you'll go through 3 and 4 and 5 interviews and then the company will ghost you. Like, that was my most recent experience. I went through like maybe 3 different interviews, felt like everything was going well. The hiring manager literally said to me in the interview, you know, I want to hire you, right? Literally said this to me in an interview before having to go interview with a panel of other people. And then nothing, no follow-up, no, you didn't get the job, you got the job, we hired somebody else. It was just, and I followed up 3 times via email, nothing. So it's just like that, I think, perpetuates that cycle of like, pick me, pick me, pick me, let me demonstrate my value to you. But like, I had to really get a reality check in this and say, wait, hold on a second. Like, how many people do I know that's delivered a TED Talk, wrote 2 books, writing for Entrepreneur, featured in, you know, all of these different places, building this solid brand? How many people do I know have a Google Knowledge Panel? And I'm over here auditioning for a role for you. Like, you should be auditioning to have me as a part of your team. But not enough people have that empowerment. And I'm going to use that word very intentionally because that's the space that I focus on, right? Everything that I talk about with financial empowerment, you know, your beliefs, your fears, your traumas, the law of attraction, getting what you want, manifesting, overcoming fear, overcoming this scarcity mindset were things that were thrown in my face through this experience, right? Scarcity mindset says, I'm making close to 6-figure salary. I can't get get another one of these companies to bite and hire me, there, I need to hold on to this job for my life. Mm. Abundance mindset says opportunities are going to find me. I'm going to pick me, and I'm going to let the universe do its work.
You're saying something very interesting there, which I think if anybody takes anything out of this pandemic, we should definitely take this, that the job market is very different now. Like, gone are the days of our parents and grandparents where corporate America held the reins. Technology is turning that on their heads. How many times do you and I see on CNBC? There are not enough workers for the positions we have open. Like, we have positions, but no workers. Yeah, because you guys are perpetuating an environment that no one wants to work, or you have this mindset of what your typical employer should be, instead of understanding that it is a mutual exchange of a relationship. That, yeah, this person may want to work for you because of certain benefits, certain prestige and all that, but you also need them. You need their ingenuity. You need their creativity. You need their potential research mechanism. Like, where would some of these pharmaceutical companies be without some of these researchers coming up with these medicines? Where would some of these software companies be without some engineer coming up with some new concepts? So, and I think the problem is that when you get in kind of to service or even in our kind of field in financial services, people feel like that you don't have as much value or leeway because you're serving the customers when your interaction with the clientele is enough value that you should add to the company and they should listen to your opinion. And I think it's very telling that that's how you feel. It's like the contract was up. You're not fulfilling your end of the environment. I don't care how much bonuses and salary that you're giving me. I'm not happy on a day-to-day basis. And that says something because I'm trying to beat into the culture's head that money is not enough. Money is not enough to make us happy. It's not enough to make you get up every day. Yeah, I mean, some of you might say six figures is good enough to buy a house. It's good enough to buy luxury. It's good enough to buy all these things. But where is it in the helm of you being, you know, situated and happy every day? So how do you feel about that?
So you said something that triggered a thought in me. You know, there's a difference. So I'll share a personal experience. So, you know, I do financial coaching and I was working with a client a couple months ago. And I said, you know, what are your long-term goals? And the individual says, I want $1 million. And I said, okay, so do you want to have $1 million or do you want to earn $1 million? And they're like, what's the difference? And I was like, well, there's a huge difference. If you're earning $1 million, let's say annually, well, that's going to require a different kind of work than it is for you to accumulate $1 million, to be worth $1 million. And so I illustrate that point because you said the money is not enough, like the salary is not enough, because we are learning how to grow money different than trading our time for money, right? Like, that's the shift in the culture. Particularly within the personal finance space, exposing this lie or this illusion that we were brought up believing that we have to exchange X number of hours of our life in order to get X number of dollars versus understanding how to put systems in place or how to leverage growth opportunities to now have, I wasn't making six figures, but I have a six-figure investment portfolio, right? Like, there are a lot of high income earners who make six figures, but have nothing. And so I think, you know, that honing in on that key difference, honing in on the shift in mindset around how to make money work for you is so important, is the only reason why I'm able to do this as comfortably as I am. And by the way, I just want to say that this is not comfortable for me at all.
I wanted to talk about that because we discussed, and I'm sure you're saying I'm in the process of, like, you know, leaving home, moving to a whole new state and a whole new city and all that. And I'm pretty sure you've dealing with what I'm dealing with, which is I'm excited, fearful, scared as hell, but I'm doing it anyway. 100%. Like, and people think it was like, that's so cliche. It's like, it's really not. The amount of strength emotionally, spiritually, and psychologically that you have to take to put yourself in that position where you're going to do it anyway, even when you're unclear on the day-to-day in and outs of it, you're unclear about, I've never done this, you know, just me. I am the corporation. I am the business. I got to generate the income. I have to generate it all. So what was that? Like, I'm sure, like, after you sent the resignation letter, like, what hit first? The fear, the excitement, the like, how did you get back to that even keel? It's like, okay.
I'm going to answer your question in the reverse order. So I think only recently, within the last couple of days, have I gotten to a place where I'm stable. I won't even say even kill, right? Because I know that I have a check coming, my very last check coming. And then it's like, okay, now what? I do have a plan. I won't go into the details around what that plan looks like, but I do have a plan financially. And I'm looking at options. The fear was the heaviest leading up to the moment that I pressed the send button. And I think that was compounded by the fact that I was worried about what people were going to think. I was worried about disappointing people, particularly the people close to me, my parents, my mom specifically. I shared in that tweet thread that I'm somebody who has always done the right thing. I'm somebody who's always been responsible. I've been on the honor roll since I was in the kindergarten. You know, I was involved in extracurriculars. Like, I failed my first class ever in high school. I just have always been an overachiever. I've always been very ambitious. And so this move, without having a job lined up to kind of transition into, in a lot of people's eyes, would be considered irresponsible. But it was, again, that betting on yourself. So leading up to the moment that I pressed send, obviously you have a certain window of time before you can recall the message. I had no intention of recalling it, though. I made the decision the night before that this was it. And then once I pressed the send button and the noise kind of died down from the manager calling me and texting me and what have you, sharing the news on social media, having different people reach out to me, text me, call me, what have you, then I felt this cool calm that said, you're going to be all right. And I would be remiss if I didn't share, like, you know, we talk about money, we talk about financial intelligence and all sorts of other things. I think one of the things that the culture as a whole doesn't talk about enough is our spirituality. And that's a big part of this decision. That's the biggest part of this decision. I felt like I was being smacked in the head for the 2 weeks leading up to this decision by the universe, or whatever you want to call them, saying, you're ready. Like, you're up. Like, it's time for you to make this leap. And when you make this leap, you are going to have all of the support, reassurance, and just the team that you need behind you to make this happen. And I believe that. I believe that to this day. The reason why I feel so relaxed and so ready to go is because I'm getting that constant reassurance from, you know, my ancestors and the universe, and saying that this is mission aligned to what is your purpose. And so when you walk in your purpose, you are going to be provided for.
That's right. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Culture's Money. You can follow Jamal on Instagram and Twitter at Leo Grand Prince. That's Leo Grand Prince. You can also get in contact with Jamal via Facebook and LinkedIn. Just type in his name. That's Jamal, J-A-M-A-A-L, Vitose, V-E-T-O-S-E. Thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next time right here on The Culture's Money, baby.